Welcome to the Serviced Accommodation Property Podcast. This podcast by Kevin Paneskis, also known as the Property Soldier, covers all aspects of serviced accommodation and how to make it a profitable and sustainable business. Kevin started investing in property in 1991 whilst serving in the British Army and now owns a multi-million pound property portfolio and serviced accommodation business and is a best-selling author. And now your host, Kevin Paneskis.
Hello and welcome to the Service Accommodation Property Podcast. Now today we've got Mark Hotchkiss and he's going to be doing the keynote talk today on turning guesthouse B&Bs into apartment hotels. It's not going to be a one-stop shop course or anything like that, but he's going to give a bit of an overview and information on it. And also how it shouldn't be taken lightly. We don't expect somebody to jump into it as their very first ever deal. I always advise people to do a bit of rent-to-service accommodation or turn your own buy-to-lets or HMOs into serviced accommodation, maybe then transition into SA management and then might consider also turning a guesthouse B&B into an apartment hotel. But Mark, he's been doing service accommodation for eight years. Done rent to SA, done SA management in the past, but also, you'll be glad to hear, turning guesthouse B&Bs into apartment hotels. Got two hotels as we speak, Mark. So a lot of valuable information, I'm sure you will agree, for him to share. Can I get a massive round of applause for Mark Hotchkiss, everyone?
Good evening, everybody. Most of you know me. For those of you that don't know me, I'm Mark. I'm one of the mentors here on the SA Mastermind. In business with my brother, Rob, who you may or may not have had the pleasure to be on his table. Two sides of our business, really. We've got the in-hop property hotels, which is the kind of the business back-end side, and that's on Companies House. And then we've got Harrogate Stays, which is the guest-facing brand from there. We've got Fountains Guest House, bottom left. That's a 10-bed, more of a traditional bed and breakfast, and we're still serving breakfast there. With an apartment down below. The Belmont, which was an 8-bed, very tired B&B, now a 12-bed apart hotel with kitchenettes in the rooms. And then we've got Bank Chambers service apartments. But the focus of this talk today is going to be on apart hotels. Okay, so the strategy is converting a tired B&B into an apart hotel. So the things that really we're going to talk about today is how to source deals like this, and then how to structure them. We will then have a Q&A at the end for anything that you, any questions you may have. So, as you can see, on the left, bottom left-hand side, that's the main entrance hall. Very dated. It just makes it look like someone's thrown up as they walk through the doors. And then we're appealing to leisure and corporates in the Harrogate market. Where does this strategy fit in? So this is a pyramid that you might have seen before if you've had like a discovery day here at Progressive. So sort of very the basic vanilla buy-to-lets where finance is quite straightforward and then sourcing the properties and then into a bit more complex stuff where you're starting to get into intermediate level where there's no money down, doing rent-to-rent strategies, into service accommodation and HMOs, into commercial stuff. And that's probably where I'd say we're at in terms of sort of the advanced stuff. So we're not doing full-up commercial conversions, but we're sitting up that sort of like advanced level. So how that sort of fits in, if you've got a graph where on the x-axis you've got intensity, so if you're, this is like how hands-on you sort of need to be or like the management side of it. So you've got, you start with a single let and then the intensity of that to create an SA unit. And then if you go back to the single let, on the y-axis, you've got the density, so how many people or rooms you've got in that from that unit, we go up to HMO. And then if you combine the two, so you've got the intensity for service accommodation and you've got the density for HMOs, that's where apart hotels sit. So they're a bit of a beast, but they're worth it. So what we kind of look for is the the potential of a property. So we want to add the rooms. So in the Belmont case, we went from 8 rooms to 12 rooms. So a 50% increase from there. And then adding the value, so increasing the nightly room rates by making the rooms a lot better, and then using tech and things like Price Labs to improve the occupancy figures. And then other factors which you can't necessarily change, things like the location. And for our market, for looking at parking, Harrogate's got quite... right in the centre of Harrogate, it's a bit of a nightmare for parking. We sit ourselves just outside, so we're walking distance into town, but we can, we've got on-site parking for guests. So have you everyone heard of Rob Moore's 70-20-10? This is our guest house value add model, which is a 50-20-10. So what we're looking to do is increase the number of rooms by 50%, increase the room rates by 20%, and increase the occupancy by 10%. And those are conservative kind of figures, and that will result in a almost doubling of the business. So a 98% increase in turnover. In reality, what we've done with the Belmont, previous owner was trading below the VAT threshold at just below £85,000. And then in terms of turnover, we're almost quadrupling that turnover. Okay, why this strategy and why now? Why am I sat here or stood here talking through it? So it's quite a busy slide, but I just want to go through the key fundamentals of why it's quite a good strategy. So B&Bs are typically an undervalued asset. So you've got a big property in a good location, but there's limited buyers. People aren't necessarily in the market to buy these tired B&Bs. They're often found in premium central locations, and then they're also existing C1 use class. So that reduces the risk of with planning. There's a big generational shift. So baby boomers that were born between just post-war World War II era, 1946 to 1964, a lot of that generation are retiring now, and they may have bought a B&B 10, 15 years ago, and actually they're a bit threaders with running a B&B. And they want to just actually enjoy their retirement. But their offspring don't want to take it on because they've seen that it's not a particularly great lifestyle. And it's quite hands-on. It doesn't need to be. It's quite an established but outdated business model. So a lot, I'll talk about a typical B&B couple and how they run it. The good thing with these C1 use class is we're in the room here talking about service accommodation, which is a C3 use class typically, but there's a bit of a grey area. We know that some form of regulation or licensing is coming down the road. We don't necessarily know what that looks like yet, but with C1, it's its own use class itself. So it's a known entity. The VAT threshold... creates a glass ceiling to turnover and ultimately profits. So a lot of B&B owners will trade up to £85,000 and they won't go beyond that because it's not worth it for them. When you're acquiring these, you can have quite creative structures and flexible ways of dealing with a deal like this. And I'll come onto that a bit more. And then it's also a balance of cash flow and capital growth. And you get that capital growth through the forced appreciation by upgrading the existing business and adding the extra rooms. Capital allowances are in the several hundred thousand pounds. And then what has also been a bit of a change over the last 5-10 years is the technology enablers that are now available. So things like smart locks, online guidebooks, all of these things mean that you don't have to meet and greet every single guest and hand over their key, show them to the room. COVID probably helped us a little bit in that way, so that now people aren't so shocked with arriving at a property and not having a host to greet you. We get the odd guest that's still a bit like, oh, what's going on here? But that's, with the smart locks. The USP, so we're creating... a USP. There's not that many other properties in Harrogate that offer kitchenettes. So if you're a corporate traveller and you're on the road a lot, and but you're on your own, you might not want to go out for a meal and sit a table for one and, going out. So actually having a kitchenette and having the flexibility to be able to cook for yourself, and you might be on a bit of a health drive, but I know in January a lot of people are. So having somewhere where you can do your own cooking in the room, but not have a full-up one, two-bed apartment, which will be a bit more expensive. And then last thing is it's viewed as a sort of a community asset, so it's helping the local economy, because you're getting people coming in from out of town, spending their money in the local bars, restaurants and shops, and so that's looked at favourably, as opposed to a nasty, greedy landlord who, every way the wind blows, the politicians want to slam you. So that's another benefit for it. This is so I feel that it's a bit of a perfect storm, and it has been for the last few years. So a typical baby boomer, hands-on operator. We've got a lovely couple here who owned, I think it was the world's best B&B, but they only owned it for 8 or 9 months and then sold it. But typically, trading below 85K, they started before Booking.com. So what's happened is Booking.com have come in and they're taking typically 15% of their turnover. And if they can't go above 85,000, that's just coming straight out of their bottom line. A lot of the rooms are dated and they don't have the money or spare money for the maintenance or refurbs. They don't have any systems in place, so they're very hands-on. So if they go away on holiday, then their income stops. So not only have they got to pay for a holiday, they've also... they're also not getting an income from their business. A lot of before all these online payments and contactless payments, a lot of this was done sort of cash, and it may or may not have been fully declared. But that's kind of gone now. All the bookings are coming online. They're paying via the website, paying via the OTAs. So that's not even a player anymore. Utilities and linen costs have all increased, again, squeezing that margin. They're either cleaning themselves to reduce the overheads, which you can appreciate is pretty back-breaking, as well as cooking a breakfast first thing in the morning. And then, what sort of exit do they have? If they've got offspring, the offspring might not want to pass on the business. And since 2017, we've had 650,000 baby boomers reaching state pension age every year. So that equates to one every 48 seconds. So quite a few out there. Obviously, they don't all own B&Bs, but there's a lot out there. I just want to emphasise, and I get a little bit concerned when people go and do the three-day course with Kevin. He talks about his apart hotel down south, and then people come into the room and they're like, right, I'm not going to bother with SA. I'm going to go straight into apart hotels. That's where the real money's at. And I'm just like, whoa, just chill. Like, and you'll probably hate me for it, but I honestly believe that you need to cut your teeth on some service accommodation units first. So it's not a passive income stream. It's not get rich quick. It's not really set and forget, unfortunately, but it's getting it a bit easier. You will have to put in some of your own funds, more than likely. I'm sure it is possible if you JV with the right person. I definitely wouldn't advocate if you're a bit of a technophobe. We rely heavily on technology. And then for those easily offended, some of the reviews. I used to read the reviews and it would ruin my weekend. But I've turned off the notifications for reviews. I'd recommend everyone does that. And then just... Yeah, read them in your own time. This is a conversation. This is just after COVID, and this is why I sort of suggest that it's not like passive. I'm on holiday here, kayaking with the family, and then get a message. This is before we had a virtual assistant, so I was pretty dealing with all the messaging coming through. And then basically a family group couldn't stay because of the travel restrictions. So, and this is a big advocate for WhatsApp Business. So if you've been on my table, I'm sure I will have covered WhatsApp Business and how powerful it is. And I definitely think you should all be using it in your businesses. But I was able to then bring them forward by a week, slot them into the calendar, and then we took a direct booking as a result. And then it was £3,000 booking, but we saved ourselves over 500 quid in commissions. But at the expense of me being on holiday with the family and kayaking and then just having to go, all right, hold on a second. So we just pulled over and whilst I sorted that out. But saves 500 quid. okay, but what this strategy is, okay, so we all know this, and we're not naive enough to believe that it's just a passive income. So it is it's a hospitality business and it's a property business. But it's also a sales and marketing business. So you've got to have all of those hats on. It's time-intensive initially, setting these things up, and then getting your systems in place. And then also pretty relentless. Like Rob and I hit pretty rock bottom in February 2021, where the builders had finished, and we still had a massive load of stuff to do before it was going to be guest ready. And this was back in 2021, so the coronavirus was still very much a thing. We didn't know if we were going to be able to open, and then all the costs had kind of gone up. And then when we're getting our furniture shipped through, there was the container ship that got stuck in the Suez Canal. So that screwed everything as well for some of our furniture. Anyway, we got through it. As I've said, not for beginners. There's a lot of moving parts and things can go wrong. And when they do go wrong, they go wrong quickly. But once you've got through that, it can be scalable. You can put the systems in place and then also can be a very saleable asset to the right buyer. Would anyone like to know more? How to source these deals and how to structure these deals? Okay, so this is a InHot Property Hotels value add 7-step process where we source, we structure, and then we secure a deal, we supplement with extra rooms, then we systemize it, and we streamline it to make it nice streamlined business, and then we settle up through commercial finance. Sorry. Okay, so step one is to source. Okay, so first thing is we're going to identify a target area. So when we're looking at an area, ideally, if it's got multiple B&Bs in the area or Premier Inns, that sort of thing, with good transport links, and then it's very easy to fill these units up at the weekends with leisure, but what is the make or break is the midweek bookings. So those 2 to 4 night midweek bookings. Making sure that we've got amenities in the area. So cafes, restaurants, shops, etc. And I use the mnemonic STARE. Whenever I'm looking at purchasing any property, STARE. So not so crucial for a B&B, but S is for schools. And then T for transport links. A is for amenities. R is for regeneration. Going into an area, and then E is employment, so making sure there's a good wide base of good employers in an area. Once we've identified the target market, we're going to identify a target project. So looking at, this is my gauge on it, so 8 to 12 rooms. I wouldn't really go much beyond 16 rooms, but if you've got the funding for it, then go for it. The reason I say kind of 8 to 12 rooms is because you want to be adding the rooms from the owner's accommodation, which is typically you're going to get 4 or 5 rooms out of that. And then as a percentage, a 50% uplift helps at the back end when you're looking at the valuation. If the owners are too busy to work on the business and they're not systemized, they're technophobes, they don't have any idea about a channel manager. When we were buying the Belmont, the owner was talking about how he was on holiday and he was down at the pool, and then his phone, he got a text message from booking.com, and then he had to go back up to his hotel room, open up his laptop, log in, and then block off the dates that just come in on his calendar so he wouldn't get a double booking. And I'm like, oh my life, this is imagine running a business like that. They're also not really sure what they are going to do after the sale. Which helps because you can paint a picture in their mind of what they're doing. And then you're looking to build a sourcing machine. Now, I'm typically looking at Rightmove here, but there's loads of other websites so UK businesses for sale. A lot of the commercial estate agents will have hotel section or guest house B&B sections. but scrape the leads from Rightmove and then look on both residential and commercial sides. So 5+ bedrooms. And then if you're not already using the Property Log Chrome extension, so have that downloaded and that will give you all the back history to any particular listing. So it'll say how long it's been on for, if there have been any price changes, and you can assess the level of motivation from there. Usually there'll be a floor plan, so you can scan the floor plans and just have a rough idea about how many extra rooms you can add. And then use a virtual assistant to scrape the contact information from either Google. A lot of the businesses will have their own website and they'll have an About Us page, so you'll be able to know, find out who the owners are, what their first names are, and that will help when you come to sending a letter. Or it will be on their booking listing on, under the host profile. So, and then you want to enter the details, or the VA will enter the details in a CRM bit of software, for example, Podio. And then you're going to build templates to track the progress on certain leads so you can keep tabs, and hopefully you'll have a few deals in the pipeline to be able to go through. And then you're going to send out the letters, so direct to vendor, so template letter or cover off in a moment. And then you're going to mail merge into from Podio and then send out your letters. So first class, so it's important, it shows that it's quite important, but then handwrite the address on the envelope. And this is a template letter. So we had a 26% response rate from these letters that we sent out in Harrogate. So top right, you're going to have the business address and then the details of the B&B that you're sending the letter to. So personalised with the name, and then we've just got an introductory, rather than saying we're looking to buy your business, but if you can put the name of the B&B on there, and then a bit of fluff from the website, and then a specific location that you're interested in. and then we'd also done a project just up the road in Knaresborough, so we use that as a bit of social proof. And then we'd like to offer you market rate for the property. So we don't really know what market rate is, especially if it's not even been on the market. So the way you would establish what the market rate is using an independent hotel's valuation from there. You're also offering flexibility and then using your wet signature. And then rather than leaving a phone and an email address, just leave your email address. And the reason we do that is so that they're not just going to call you out of the blue. You're just doing the school run and you're taking a phone call and then you're like, sorry, where are you calling from? And then you don't have the details to hand. So if they respond via email, which they hopefully will do, then you can take time to go back into Podio, look at what the details are of Alexa House, because they don't know necessarily that you've sent 40-odd letters to other B&Bs in the area. So hopefully from that, you'll get a few viewings. And what I'd recommend is splitting up the viewing. So on the first viewing, it's all about the property. So you're going to use this opportunity to build a bit of rapport as well. And remember, acquisitions like this are going to take several months. Typically, we first sent out our letters in August 2018, and then we got the keys for the Belmont in May 2019. So it took quite a long time. And then just have a touch on circumstances, but I wouldn't sort of labour that too much on the first viewing. Second viewing, you're going to focus a bit more on the circumstances, measure up a few rooms and see if they will be big enough for kitchenettes. I'm just going to take this lanyard off. Sorry, listeners. And then also get a copy of the accounts, because they might say, oh yeah, it's a really, really profitable business, and then actually you look at it and it's not doing very well at all. And then we're into the third viewing. Is everyone familiar with the offer but not on offer strategy, or how to talk about that? So what you would do is you don't want to offend them, so you can suggest using the phrase, we've done this in the past, but it probably won't work for you. And then you put an offer out there, but you're not actually saying it's an offer to them. And you just gauge what their reaction to that is. So using phrases similar to, we understand that you want market rate. We're not able to get commercial lending on the current accounts, so we need this valuation. But we need time to go and do the refurb. But then we need a bit more time to do the trading so that then we're eligible for commercial commercial finance at the price you want. And then you're looking to float the idea of exchange with delayed completion is how I would skin the cat. So how do you structure a exchange with delayed completion type deal? So flexibility is the key. Know what they need or want from the sale. And if you can, armed with your toolkit from all the education that you've done with Progressive, if you can offer the tools to be able to fulfill what it is they need out of the sale, then you're into a good position. A lot of the time, they won't actually know what they want and what they need to do from the sale. A lot of the time, you could then just say, "Well, how about I give you a little bit of money, a kind of a non-refundable deposit, to allow you to get out of the day-to-day, and then we'll give you a monthly return for the outstanding balance." but don't bend over backwards and be a motivated buyer. There's lots out there. So how I would structure, and how we did structure, exchange with delayed completion using vendor finance. So typically offering 10 to 20% deposit upfront, and that can be raised using investors. And then I would look to get a 24-month exchange with the delayed completion. Now, 24 months seems like a long time, but actually it will go through really, it will go past very quickly. So your refurb might take 8 to 12 months, and then you want to be trading for 12 months, and that will get you the best rates for vendor finance because you've reduced that risk. If you can show that in May you get this sort of level of turnover or your profit and loss for May, then they know that there's less risk or guesswork on their half. We offered the vendor a 5% return on the outstanding balance, and we paid that interest monthly. So it allowed them to still have a bit of an income coming in from the property to pay if they went into rented accommodation or they go and stay with family. So monthly interest payments, investor funds for the deposit, and then either personal or development or bridge funds for the refurb. We were hoping to use money from our other the business down in London, but this all happened during COVID. So that wasn't so forthcoming, unfortunately. So these are the numbers that we had for the Belmont. So in May 2019, we got the keys with an agreed purchase price of 635K. We put down 135K deposit, which was raised from mainly friends and family, offering a 6 to 9% rate. And then we had 500K outstanding, which was vendor finance, giving them a 5% interest with monthly payments of £2,086. And that was for 24 months. Then we get into the refurb, and the refurb was about £300,000 and various finance costs, and then stamp duty and legals was £25,000. So the project cost just over £1 million, and then we had retained profits from months 13 to 24 of £70,000, so leaving a balance of £990,000. Then we got the valuation through at £1.3 million. And I'll come on to the valuation in a moment. We got 65% loan-to-value with a commercial lender. We had to pay more fees, so broker fees, valuation fees, arrangement fees. So money left in from the deal is £175,000 with an annual net profit of just over £100,000. So ROI of 57.6. So this is the valuation from it. So you'll get three valuations, so market value 1, 2, and 3. So market value 1 is it trading in its current guise and not a fire sale. So this is the valuation. So they look at the number of rooms, what your fair maintainable trade is, so annual sort of turnover, and then a conversion rate, so what your margin is with the profit, and then you have a multiple. So in this instance, the multiple for us, given the property, the location, our experience was 7.25, giving a valuation of 1.3 million. So these are the factors that affect that 7.25 multiple. So property condition, the location, what systems you've got in place, what staff are on the books, how as a percentage, how many repeat bookings do you get? What are your reviews like? The branding, are you like a professional, professionally branded? The level of experience for the operators and owners, and then what kind of margin you're running. There's also more to it, but the valuation report was probably about 40 pages long. But this is where we're talking about the forced appreciation. So as we get more and more experience, as we build the reviews, then that multiple of 7.25 could get increased to 8 or even 10. So if we had a multiple of 10, what do you think the valuation would be from there? So the valuation, if I look at the market value, is 1.3. So it's this figure here. So 180,000 times 7.25 gives 1.3 million. So if we maintain the operating profit of 180,000 and it's now a multiple of 10, what would the value be? 1.8 million, yeah. So obviously that's commercial valuation. Whether or not you'd get someone buying it for that is a different story. And that is pretty much the kind of snapshot in terms of sourcing the type of properties, why I think it's a good strategy, and then how to structure a typical exchange delayed completion deal. There we go.
Okay, hopefully you all think you'll agree that that was extremely interesting and probably taking you a step further in your property journey in terms of what you can essentially go on to do. Guesthouse B&B into an apart hotel, but as Mark said, shouldn't be taken lightly or as your first ever deal. So if for people listening on the podcast, if they did want to reach out to you, I'm guessing In Hot Property would be a good place to start.
Yeah, so Facebook or email info@inhotproperty.co.uk.
Awesome. So thanks very much, Mark. Can I give another round of applause? Mark Hodgkiss, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Serviced Accommodation Property Podcast. You can also follow me on social media and YouTube by searching The Property Soldier. Also check out my website, www.propertysoldier.co.uk, where you can learn even more about property investing and serviced accommodation.